So this is a story that if you've been anywhere within 100 miles of a church in your life, you've heard. When I was a child, and we used to go to Arco gas stations, they would have children's toys, and one of the children's toys was a plastic boat with Noah and the animals on the ark. I mean, this is a story that has permeated our culture and cultures before us. And if you read the story really closely, it's really unnerving. And yet, because of the rhythm in the original Hebrew, over generations, it's been told as a children's story. And there have even been children's songs developed. I grew up with one called Arky Arky. Do any of you remember that song? Yeah, there's a few of you who do. Rise and shine and give God the glory, glory, because the Lord told Noah to build him an Arky Arky. And the song goes on and tells the whole story, and it's in this catchy, bouncy melody. And then I read the story, and I wonder, how did the story get there? The creator of the heavens and the earth and the cosmos is grieved, heartbroken, because the creations called humans just can't seem to live up to the image that they bear, which is the image of their creator. They struggle time and time again with living out of their core identity as beloved reflections of that beloved divinity. And so out of this grief, this heartbrokenness, the creator decides to wipe the earth clean of all of those creatures, save one family and a few animals. That family is then required to take the next 40 years and build an ark, a huge boat, in the middle of a barren desert, in the midst of seemingly little, if any, rainfall, and to endure the derision and the insults and the mockery of those around them. And then to gather into said boat with their family and with the pairs of all of these animals that have gathered onto the boat as well. And then to set sail upon these waters and live with each other for the next year and have to deal with the smell of the animals and the annoyance of being in such close quarters and listening to the desperate screams of the others drowning around them. And all the time wondering, will dry land ever appear, or are we destined for the rest of our days to be bobbing back and forth and up and down in this big boat that smells to high heaven? And then having to endure all of the disillusionment that comes from that and the doubts. Did we do the right thing? Maybe it would have been better to perish with everyone else. And then to eventually receive a sign, a leaf from an olive tree, that there is life on this planet and that maybe there is dry ground, and then to land on that dry ground and be faced with the prospect of recreating the species from scratch. No wonder this whole experience led Noah to drink, drowning his sorrows in the fruit of that newly formed vine, under the weight of all that he and his family had to experience through that. And at the end of that, we're all supposed to sing that everything is hunky-dory? Rise and shine, give God the glory, glory? It seems like a bit of a stretch, at least to me. But Noah did it. The world was a mess. People were dividing against each other, destroying each other, could not find a way to peacefully coexist or coexist at all. And Noah hears this call and he responds. in the midst of all the self-doubting and the doubts from others and the derisions and the disillusionment, Noah steps out in faith. And so he prepares himself. Feel a bit like Mr. Rogers now. And he builds the ark, and then he starts spreading the word to let people know that they need to do something and get on the boat. The hashtag was thrown in for our convenience. So Noah does all of this, and he's on the boat, and he's wondering, what have I done? What's going to happen? What about my family? When can I get rid of these animals? And then, in the middle of the story, a turning point. Genesis 8:1. God remembered Noah. God let Noah know that he was not forgotten. And the sign of the olive branch leaf appeared, and the waters receded, and they entered onto the new dry land. The recreation had begun. And Noah had a chance, along with his family, to start again. Out of the most unusual of circumstances, seemingly preposterous probabilities and possibilities, they had a chance. And Noah was given a new sign, and with it, a new message. He could ditch the raincoat and share a new message with all of creation. Never again. Never again. If you look at our world today, it seems that that message hasn't quite gotten through. Has it not? How often is human history a story of one group of people trying to get rid of another group of people? Because they are perceived, for one reason or another, as inferior. They don't meet our criterion for what is truly good and right and human. And so we're going to do everything we can to rid the earth of all of those people that don't fit our understanding of what it means to be a human being. Charlottesville is just the latest tragic, deadly example of this seemingly never-ending feedback loop, this passion play that we find ourselves in. What part of never again is so hard to understand for us? And yet there seems to be these seeds of superiority that are planted, even embedded, in the depths of our psyches, that somehow we can always look at someone else and say either they aren't like I am, or thank God I'm not like them, or I'm not sure that our world is safe for their presence. And so instead of going back to our core identity, which is beneath those seeds of superiority, and remember that we are loved and we are love, we plug into that place of fear. And our fear takes over. And we begin to make distinctions. And we begin to build barriers and walls. And we begin to concoct plans of how we can purify our society. Or ways that we can separate ourselves so that we don't have to deal with the others who don't match up in the ways we feel they should match up. In a world where storms are seemingly breaking out every day, where's this sign? Where are the rainbows? I mean, I see them on flags here and there. See them on bumper stickers, t-shirts, occasionally in people's hair. Where are the rainbows? Where are those signs of the everlasting promise that we are in this together, that we are all God's children, that we are indeed one people, one creation, one world? One example I can think of is a church in Philadelphia, Broad Street Presbyterian Church, a historic church. It's been around since the times of the Revolution. And yet, like many churches with a long history in a more urban setting, the participation and membership had gradually been dissipating. So what did they do? They called a young pastor to come in and to revitalize their life and to bring in new people and to bring them back to the days of old, the glory years. And the young pastor came in and had some ideas of his own of how they might revitalize their life together. And within a couple of years, he realized there's something different happening here. The neighborhood has changed. Our culture has changed. And so together they embarked on a journey to discover more fully who they were and who their neighbors are. The church today is called Broad Street Ministry. And their beautiful, opulent dining room is now a place where they serve dinner to the homeless and the unemployed and the people in need. And it's not a line where people get a plate of food and go around and find a seat at a long table. It is a dining room with china and cloth napkins and a nice meal served to the table. They've created a day center with employment services, connections to longer-term and permanent housing. They've even set up P.O. boxes for people who don't have an address, so that can help them in their search for employment. They have connection to services for people struggling with addiction. All sorts of ways this church has opened itself and not created all of these ministries, but in some cases just housed them. There's a rainbow. As I mentioned before, in our time with children, the eclipse is an incredible example of this phenomenon when people recognize that there is more to us than our differences, and that even complete strangers can come together for an embrace. An eclipse happens only once ever so often. Rainbows happen all the time. And at least where I was sitting and the glasses I was wearing, in the midst of that darkness, I saw a rainbow. When I see our life here together, and I see several of you caring for your loved ones on a daily basis, and others of you rallying around those families and providing meals and transportation and friendship, presence. When some of us catch a vision to do something new and creative and exciting and beautiful, whether that be recruiting a group of people to go build and repair wells in Nicaragua, or three of our families going to help those in need in Peru, or some of us catching a vision for one of our older spaces to be re-envisioned and re-beautified, as you will see, if you haven't already, our beautiful new choir room. I see others of you who serve here behind the scenes in ways that most of us don't see, and who are offering support through prayer or through calling upon those who are homebound or sitting with those who are walking through a challenging season of life. Rainbow, 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 rainbow. Rainbows are everywhere. Do you see them? Our cover quote is from, one of them is from Pablo Neruda. And since I don't have it in front of me, I'm going to paraphrase, but you can read it and correct me later. But he basically says, where does the rainbow end? In your soul or on the horizon? And I would add to that, where does the rainbow end? In your soul or on the horizon? Or beyond you? Or among you? I've seen where the rainbow begins. Do you? Amen.